Hello, everyone, and welcome to the second edition of the Inside the MLB podcast. I'm your asinine host, Justin Millar, and today I'll be flying solo on this edition of the podcast. We'll be talking baseball, as always. This episode will be specifically about the upcoming Hall of Fame announcement on Wednesday, January 9th. I do have an article about my hypothetical ballot coming out on Monday, January 7th, which the podcast may or may not be up by then. So in this episode, I'll basically go through who I'll vote for, who I would vote for, and go over some cases of 22 guys who realistically deserve at least a look at for Hall of Fame enshrinement. I did go over my ballot last podcast, but I only really glanced over it, who I'd vote for, so I figure I'll go more in depth with it. So let's get started. So we'll begin by going over three guys who really aren't going to get much consideration on the ballot, but had strong careers, and they at least deserve mentioning. And Steve Finley, who was a member of the 300 Home Run, 300 Steal Club, he had a really long, nice career. Not Hall-worthy, but still. Hall of Nearly Great-worthy. Sean Green, of course, 4-home-run game. Hit 40 home runs 3 times, although it was really overlooked considering he did it in the heart of the steroid era from 1999 to 2002. He played Gold Glove defense. He was a really outstanding slugger for a period of time, but ultimately he didn't play that long, so he didn't get the counting numbers that would necessarily mean his enshrinement. And then David Wells, who compared to Jack Morris, who some view as a slam dunk Hall of Famer. Wells is quite deserving, actually, when you look at stats such as wins above replacement. Morris was at 39.3 wins above replacement, while Wells had a career of 49.2. That's almost 10 more. So Wells, of course, I mean, when you think of David Wells, you don't think Hall of Famer. So, but obviously, he had a fantastic career, and he definitely deserves some consideration. But he'll likely drop off the ballot after this year, just considering how loaded the ballot is. Next, we'll go to Sammy Sosa. Sammy Sosa, of course, one of the big names tied to performance-enhancing drugs. Sosa hit 609 home runs in his career and 54.8 wins above replacement. He wasn't exactly as great as his home run numbers would suggest. He really only had a few peak years. He had a monster season when he had, like, 10 WAR, but he only had a few others with above 5, and if it weren't for his, like, gaudy home run total, you really wouldn't be considering him among the greater players in history. But, of course, it's hard to ignore when you hit that many home runs and you helped recreate a game that was destroyed after the 94 strike. I would personally vote for Sosa, but if he would not make my ballot if we were using the 10-man limit, which will likely come into effect this year. I'm personally not a fan of the limit, and it's never really been a problem in the past, but this year you have so many guys worthy of consideration that it's hard to limit it to 10 guys without leaving some really worthy people out. So next we'll go to Craig Biggio. Biggio is a slam dunk Hall of Famer, in my opinion. He had an excellent career, of course, with 3,000 hits. He wasn't that great towards the end of his career, but he had a really strong peak, including an excellent 1997 season where he had 9.3 wins above replacement. He was a doubles machine. He got hit by plenty of pitches, played a catcher, second base, and center field quite well. He was a great great player for his time. He's easily overlooked in the steroid era because he didn't hit for plenty of home runs. I mean, he topped out at 26 in 2005, but he was never the guy to go out and slug 40 home runs in a season. He accrued 62 wins in his career, so excellent career. He's an easy Hall of Famer. Some people are not voting for him because they don't believe he was a true peak guy, although when you look at advanced metrics, he really did have excellent peak years in the late 90s. He was the face of the Astros for a while, and it's hard to not put him in the Hall of Fame. The next guy we'll go over is a fellow center fielder, or guy who played center field, and Kenny Lofton, who is probably the most underlooked player on the ballot this year. Lofton is a lot more deserving than many people think. He, of course, was known for his speed and outstanding defense in center field. Led the league in stolen bases five straight years from 1992 to 1996, including the strike-shortened season in 94. Got on base quite a lot for a leadoff hitter. He was really the prototypical leadoff hitter, and maybe one of the best all-time once you get past Henderson and a guy we'll go over later, Tim Raines. So, Lofton really had a brilliant career. He, of course, offensively, he was hit for high averages, but defensively, he was just outstanding. Wins above replacement, which I personally think is a good place to start, certainly, really likes him, of course, with 65 wins above replacement. That's easily Hall of Fame standards. So Lofton, unfortunately, he may even fall off the ballot this year with how loaded it is, but he's certainly a guy who really deserves more consideration, and maybe sometime down the road he will get in. The next guy is Curt Schilling. Schilling is, once you look past his makeup issues and all the recent bad press against him, he really had one hell of a career. Pitched plenty of innings, struck out a ton of guys. He had 300 strikeouts three times. Won plenty of games, if you want to look at that. He won three World Series rings with the Diamondbacks and Red Sox. Of course, had awesome postseason heroics with the Bloody Sock game and, of course, some of his other performances. He wins above replacement, again, is a fan of his, 76.9. That's really good, to say the least. He's definitely Hall. I'd vote for him. He would be on. He would reach my 10-man ballot. He had an excellent career. It's hard to not put him in the Hall of Fame as a guy like him. The next guy is Mike Piazza. Piazza, of course, is getting bad press from a lot of people for the accusations of steroids, although there's no hard evidence whatsoever. My standard with steroids is I really don't care unless you tested positive after the suspensions were reinforced. I mean, everyone was taking them in the 90s, and obviously if players such as Mike Jacobs, who get caught for taking steroids, but really were nothing in their careers. So, and Piazza, he didn't take steroids, as far as we know. He may very well have, but we don't know, and you can't force that on somebody. Piazza, of course, perhaps may have been the greatest offensive catcher of all time, with 427 home runs, great on-base abilities, 377 career on-base percentage. He spent quite a bit of time with the Dodgers and Mets and five games with the Marlins, which I find more one of the more fascinating stories in baseball history. He's a clear Hall of Famer in most people's eyes, and really it's hard to have Hall of Fame without him. I mean, Johnny Bench and then Mike Piazza as far as the best offensive catchers of all time. So next we'll go into the two most controversial players on the ballot in Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds. I'll start with Clemens, who perhaps might have been the greatest pitcher of all time. Of course, 133 wins above replacement is one of the best in history. Plenty of wins, 354 if you want to go by that stat. 3.12 career ERA, pitched nearly 5,000 innings. Over 4,600 career strikeouts. I mean, he had plenty of moments where he was the best pitcher in baseball, and he won 7 Cy Young Awards to show for it. You can't really have a Hall of Fame without possibly the greatest pitcher of his era, and if not of all time. And if you want to draw the line of where he was taking performance-enhancing drugs, I mean, you could maybe stop it off in the maybe mid-90s if you wanted to, and by then he was already on a Hall of Fame career path. I mean, you can't keep Roger Clemens out of the Hall of Fame. And the same goes for Bonds. Barry Bonds might have been the greatest player of all time once you factor in eras, park effects, and the fact that Barry Bonds actually faced African-American pitchers unlike Babe Ruth. He also was a much better defender than Ruth ever was, and base runner as well. I mean, Barry Bonds might have been the greatest all-around player ever. He, of course, in the earlier in his career for the Giants and Pirates, he was one of the best defensive center fielders in baseball. He stole plenty of bases, including a 30-50 season in 1990 at the age of 25. He, of course, I mean, walked a lot even before he was all getting all those intentional walks, such as the 2004 season where he drew 120 intentional walks that year. I mean, he hit plenty of home runs, of course, the all-time home run king. He did everything. I mean, it's 158 wins above replacement, and that's second best all-time, I believe. It's just, you can't take Barry Bonds. The Hall of Fame just isn't relevant without Barry Bonds in it. So Bonds is an easy yes vote for me, and Clemens as well. So next we'll move on to Bernie Williams. Not really much of a case here. I mean, he's definitely worth a mention. He stayed on the ballot after getting 9.6% of the vote last year. Plenty of good years with the Yankees. Was instrumental in their dynasty in the late 90s. Was a very good player of all time, but he wasn't a great player. So, I mean, Bernie Williams, I'm sorry, but it's not really a Hall of Famer. Next up, we'll do Rafael Palmeiro, who is one of the interesting guys in the ballot in the fact that he tested positive for performance-enhancing drugs after they began testing, which is in fact cheating in my eyes. So I'm not a huge Palmeiro fan. I mean, his numbers are fantastic. If you look at his career totals, he had absolutely crazy longevity, playing 20 years in the majors, 3,000 hits, 500 home runs, but he wasn't as good as those career numbers would suggest. He never had that true peak. He was merely just good for a long time. He never had a season above 6.5 wins above replacement. He was very limited defensively. So once you get past those 3,000 hits and 500 home runs, which are, to many people, guarantees into enshrinement, you don't have that great of a player, and if it weren't for him playing for a long time, he probably wouldn't have reached those milestones. And, I mean, he's really a borderline guy for me. I probably would vote yes, but with how loaded the ballot is, he definitely would not make the 10 that you have, the 10 limit, but I'd very much consider him not a Hall of Famer. I mean, he's really controversial. You could say a lot about him. You can easily make a case for him, but I'm just going to go with that he really didn't have the Hall of Fame peak that you need to get into Cooperstown. So next we'll jump into Dale Murphy, who of course has gotten a lot of press for his son writing a letter to the Baseball Writers Association and Hall of Fame voters, telling them basically why Murphy belongs in the Hall. And Murphy was an excellent player for a good amount of time, one of the best players of the 1980s. Solid overall player, had quite a few great seasons, but he never really played at a Hall of Fame level except for a few years in the 1980s. He played 18 seasons, but he wasn't that great in the beginning of those and at the end of those. So his argument is really just about his peak years, and those peak years are fantastic by any means, but they don't necessarily carry him into enshrinement. He's a guy that we'll see a boost in his voting this year, probably, because a lot of people are going to be voting for him since it is his last year on the ballot. But Dale Murphy is really the prime example of the Hall of Nearly Great batter. He definitely deserves consideration, but he's not a Hall of Famer in my eyes and most people's eyes. Don Mattingly, another guy whose case is largely built around his peak years. He played 14 seasons, which is extremely short by Hall of Fame standards, and only five of those seasons were really great years. He had a phenomenal career, of course, but one of the better players in the early and mid-1980s, but he's a lot like Murphy in that his peak does not carry his lack of longevity, and Don Mattingly is not a Hall of Famer for me. So 9 guys left. We'll go into Mark McGwire. McGwire was really a one-dimensional player in his career, hitting 583 home runs and drawing plenty of walks. He suffered through plenty of injuries, which really cost him, as he only played 16 years in the big leagues with Oakland and St. Louis, all under Tony La Russa. He, by wins above replacement, he was really borderline, as he had roughly 58.7 wins in his career, but a lot of that's brought down by the fact that he played quite a bad first base. So, I mean, his case is entirely built around his offense, and he was a prototypical slugger. Of course, had that monster rookie year with the A's in 1987, and then broke Roger Maris's home run record in 1998, and hit 60 home runs twice, 70 in 1998. I mean, McGwire had the peak. He didn't necessarily have the longevity, but his peak was that good that he's a Hall of Famer. I'd definitely vote for him. I believe I did not list him in my top 10 in my ballot for the article I wrote that comes out Monday, as I don't feel he's one of the 10 best guys on the ballot, since he really was quite one-dimensional in that he only really hit home runs and walked. So he's not going to get a lot of consideration from most voters. He had 90.5% of the vote last year, and that's probably going to drop with the increase in worthy candidates. But McGwire's a Hall of Famer in my book, and it's the amount of the 10 voting limit rule and the amount of players is really going to affect him. But yeah, I'd put him in the Hall of Fame. Next, we'll go Fred McGriff. McGriff is, some people consider him a Hall of Famer. I don't. I see the 493 home runs, and I think he played 19 years in the big leagues. He played for a very long time. He was very good for a very long time, but he was never great. And he when you think of Fred McGriff, you really don't associate that with Hall of Fame, and the stats really say he wasn't a Hall of Famer, except for that gaudy home run total. I mean, wins above replacement has him at 48.2. Jay Jaffe's Jaws system ranks him as the 28th best first baseman of all time, and definitely below Hall of Fame standards. So, I mean, McGriff, he'll get support, and will definitely drop this year with the increase in ballot size, of course. But I'm not a fan of McGriff. I would not vote for him. Next one, Larry Walker. I went pretty in-depth on Larry Walker in the last show. I'm a definite yes on him. I believe he had the easy peak and didn't play for too long, but he had a solid career and, of course, was an excellent all-around player. And he's a borderline guy, but I really like him, and I definitely would put him in. Edgar Martinez, I mean, he was probably the best designated hitter of all time, of course. Excellent offensive player. Hit one of the few players in the career 300, 400, 500 triple slash line, that is batting average, on base percentage, and slugging percentage. He had a late start to his career. He wasn't really a full-time regular until age 27, but he did play until through age 41. He was still valuable then. On-base machine, 418 career OBP, led the league in on-base percentage three times. He won two batting titles. Hit 309 career home runs. Wins above replacement has him at 64.4 wins. And Jay Jaffe's Jaws, once again, has him as the 9th best third baseman, as he did play roughly a third of his career games at third base of all time, and obviously the best as a designated hitter. He easily had the peak, and he played 18 years despite his late start. So Edgar's definitely a Hall of Famer in my mind, and most who look at the advanced metrics really see him as an easy pick to go into the Hall of Fame. Of course, he's not going to get a lot of support from the traditional voters, since he didn't have those all-important counting stats such as RBIs, but still, Martinez, he's a Hall of Famer, and he deserves a place in Cooperstown someday. So we'll go over five players left to go over. We'll start with Alan Trammell. Trammell is one of the more borderline guys, but I really see him as a Hall of Famer because he was definitely a solid offensive player through his career, excellent defensively, but he was overshadowed in both ends, playing alongside Barry Larkin, Ozzie Smith, and Cal Ripken Jr. But overall, he had a Hall of Fame career, 67 wins above replacement. Jaws rates him as the 11th best shortstop of all time. Excellent career peak. He actually ranks ahead of Hall of Famers Barry Larkin and Lou Boudreau, Pee Wee Reese, Luis Aparicio, and Jaws. And he's just one spot behind Derek Jeter. And Derek Jeter's a no-doubt Hall of Fame guy in most people's mind. And so the Trammell's been on the ballot for quite a while, and he may drop off this year if he doesn't get the necessary votes, considering how crowded it's going to be. But I included him in my 10 in the article I wrote for Inside the MLB, as this is his 12th year on the ballot, and he definitely is a deserving candidate. Next we'll do Lee Smith. Lee Smith, we'll go quickly in, as he's a clear no for me. I'm not a big fan for Leaf pitchers in the Hall of Fame, aside from the all-time greats, and Lee Smith was not one of the all-time greats. He was really good at getting saves, but I don't really look at saves, and he didn't do much else, so Lee Smith is not a Hall of Famer for me, but unfortunately he will get some support due to his once-time place as the all-time leader in saves. Next, we'll go into Tim Raines, who's getting quite a bit of support from the sabermetric community, as this is his sixth year eligible for the Hall of Fame, and he's only topped out at roughly 48% last year. He's a very worthy candidate. Jaws has him as the eighth best left fielder of all time, ahead of guys like Manny Ramirez and Joe Medwick and Jim Rice, who are already in the Hall of Fame. Well, Manny's not, but should be someday. And he, excellent leadoff hitter, played solid left field defense. A 385 career OBP, 808 stolen bases. He'd be much more remembered if he wasn't overshadowed by Ricky Henderson throughout his career. And, he's one of the best leadoff hitters ever, and you can't keep Tim Raines out of the Hall of Fame, no matter. Even if you're not going to look at the advanced metrics, you can easily see his numbers and his batting average and on-base percentage and ability to hit for plenty of gap power and score plenty of runs, but unfortunately he's been overlooked so far, but hopefully that changes. So now we're going to be down to the last two players, which will be Jeff Bagwell. Bagwell is getting, it's kind of the same treatment as Piazza, whereas some are suspecting him of steroid use, even though there really is no evidence against him, and if you take out any steroid questions, he's an easy Hall of Famer. Only played 15 seasons, which is pretty short, but he still had 76.7 wins above replacement in his career, which is outstanding. Jaws-wise, he rates as the sixth best first baseman of all time, which is just incredible. He, of course, had a very long and sustained peak, walked plenty, hit for plenty of power, home runs and doubles. High batting average, .297 career, a batting average, .408 OBP, and .540 slug. Stole 30 bases in a season twice. Jeff Bagwell is a Hall of Famer. And the suspicion some voters are putting on him is completely unfair to Bagwell. So he's an easy yes for me. I'm not going to go into too much more on him. He's definitely a guy who should get in. He's projecting towards getting his David Schoenfield wrote over at the Sweet Spot blog. But some halt right now due to those suspicions. The last guy we'll go over is obviously possibly the most talked about guy on the ballot in Jack Morris. Morris has been on the ballot for over a decade. Hasn't gotten that much much support until recently. 66.7% of the vote last year. So obviously he's extremely close, and he's probably one of the better chances of getting in this year. The metrics really just He's really merely just good at 39.3 WAR. Jaws has him at as the 167th best starting pitcher of all time. So do you really want the 167th best starting pitcher of all time in the Hall of Fame? I mean, he gets a lot of credit for his postseason performances, but in reality, he had a 3.80 career postseason ERA, including some absolute games where he just blew up. Such as 1987, pitched one game in the ALCS against the Minnesota Twins, and he allowed 6 runs in 8 innings. So he overall wasn't that great of a postseason pitcher, like he's getting credit for. And I mean, he was absolutely terrible in the 1992 World Series, where he started 2 games and allowed 10 runs. if you look at the traditional stats, he had wins, which a lot of the older voters look for, 254 wins in his career. Pitched a ton of innings, nearly 4,000, which is arguably one of his biggest proponents towards his case, that he did pitch that many innings. But they weren't great innings. He was never a strikeout guy. Despite pitching all those innings, he only struck out a little less than 2,500 batters in his career. He played for a long time, and he was good for a long time, but he was not great, and he was not a Hall of Famer. And, I mean, just going back to that, Jaws scores the 167th best starting pitcher of all time. And, I mean, obviously Jaws and WAR, they aren't the end-all be-all, but they're a good starting point, and when someone's that absolutely low, it's just... It's hard to ignore something like that. I mean, he's behind some guys who you never consider a Hall of Famer. I mean, he's behind Carlos Zambrano, David Wells, who we mentioned earlier. And he's even behind a guy like Steve Rogers, who almost lost as nearly games as he won, 158 to 152. So of course, I'd put a no on Morris. I put him as a honorable mention in my article, but I'd definitely take that back now and would probably put him as a definite no. There's not really an easy case for him. All the cases that a lot of people are making, there's plenty of holes in them. So obviously it's hard to find a good case for Jack Morris. So overall, I'd vote for 13 guys that are on the ballot this year. With certain borderline candidates such as Rafael Palmeiro. The guys I'd vote for are Kenny Lofton, Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire, Mike Piazza, Curt Schilling, Craig Biggio, Tim Raines, Alan Trammell, Edgar Martinez, Larry Walker, Jeff Bagwell, Roger Clemens, and of course, Barry Bonds. So that's it for the Hall of Fame part of this, and we'll move on to the questions, as we did get 2 tweets in from what I put out on Twitter asking for you guys to send us some questions. Both of them coincidentally are Dodgers related, so I'll go into those. Sam Chase at Below Average Chan on Twitter asks, if the Dodgers' Yasiel Puig isn't attending winter camp, does that mean he isn't allowed to play in the MLB this year? I don't know if you're referring to winter ball or something. If you don't play winter ball, that's just practice. You don't need to play winter ball. He definitely probably won't be in the majors this year. He's 22 and hasn't played above high A ball. So Puig is quite a bit away, but there's a lot of potential there, and I wouldn't be surprised if he got maybe a late 2013 call-up just to see what he can do in September. But otherwise, I don't think he's going to be much of a contributor to the Dodgers this year. Dodgers-Kings fan, at Dodgers-Kings fan on Twitter, asks, what will the Dodgers do next? You know, I really don't know. I feel like they're possibly finished with... I mean, they obviously have a never-ending supply of money to spend, but still, they don't have that many holes anymore. I'd say their biggest hole offensively is at third base with Luis Cruz, who I mean, that's a possible area they could upgrade. They could, but I don't. There's not a lot of options on the free agent market, so they can't be throwing around money there. They could trade for a guy, maybe Chase Headley, although Padres likely won't deal him, and they'd have to surrender quite a bit of talent in a deal for him. And I mean, Luis Cruz, he's fine. As I mean, your worst offensive player, he's okay to have. He pit pretty well in his limited time last year. 297 average in 78 games. So there's not a lot of areas to really fill in the Dodgers team. I mean, they have plenty of rotation depth. I mean, you could add a reliever, but they just signed J.P. Howe, and they seem to be set. They already have a pretty good bullpen. So I'd be happy if I was a Dodgers fan. It's a pretty good overall team, and they should be an easy contender this year. So that'll be it for this edition of the Inside the MLB podcast. Send us questions for the next one, and we'll see you soon.